just need to listen to the news to hear how more rockets than ever before are headed to space. Now, these rockets carry satellites for things that you and I count on every day, from GPS and phones to the Elon Musk Starlight Internet constellation, weather, broadcasting, monitoring, scientific research, discovery, all kinds of stuff, and sometimes wealthy celebrities. But up until now, Canada has not been one of those rocket launching centers. Now, that is about to change. I'm Ian Grant. Welcome to Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. This afternoon, we are going to talk about the first commercial launch site in North America and one of the few in the world that's not owned by government or the military. I'm joined by Stephen Mateer, former NASA contractor, current president and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. Stephen, welcome in. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
Maritime Launch Services. There is a subreddit for people familiar with Reddit, and it's basically, it goes along the lines of explain it to me like I'm a five-year-old. There's a lot of people involved in a lot of industries that think that what they do is easy to explain until they try explaining it to someone like me, and all of a sudden, it's just a lot of words. So as we start off, if you're at a dinner party, how do you explain what you do, and how do you tell them about Maritime Launch Services?
Well, I begin by giving them the background on space launch and how we got to today. Of course, Apollo and the space shuttle program, very successful government programs. And it really was at about that 2011 timeframe with the last space shuttle mission that low Earth orbit essentially got ceded to the commercial sector. Now NASA governments are looking at deep space things. We're going to the moon. We're going to Mars. We're going to do things in deep space with different kinds of satellites. And it's at that juncture, I think, that the commercial space market realized that there was opportunity and a business case to be made to put satellites into orbit to provide things to customers. Last year, the global space economy hit $464 billion. That was just last year in 1 year. And well over $300 billion of that is the services sector. It's just what you mentioned, Starlink and those kinds of things, right? Near-Earth imaging, global broadband, GPS, whatever it is. And those are commercial companies mostly that are reaping those awards. Well, step back. How are those satellites made? They're made on Earth. How are they getting into orbit? They've got to be launched. Steps in Maritime Launch Services that sees this significant shortfall in launch capability and the opportunity to fill that niche.
I understand, like me, you have teenagers at home. Are they as impressed as they should be with what you've accomplished and especially what lies ahead for you? I mean, you'd be an awesome person to bring along to bring a parent to work day at school.
And frankly, it's something I thoroughly enjoy and have been doing in and are continuing to do. We actually have an intern from high school that's spending a couple of days every other week with us. We had a follow-along from another high schooler here recently. I've been working with the schools in the Canso area off and on over the last few years, giving presentations and working with kids, helping them understand what's going on in their backyard. And actually, back to my earliest days working as a contractor for NASA, we'd go out into the schools and we'd take a piece of space shuttle tile or something out and work with kids and get them looking up at the heavens. You know, when you can stand outside and actually see at night, there's the International Space Station flying by, or there's a satellite that's flickering in the, from the sun shining on it that they used to call the iridium flares. And you can really get these kids engaged and stuff. So it's petty stuff. It's a lot of fun, for sure.
Stephen, my love of the broadcast world has had me staring skyward for as long as I can remember. In Canada, Anik A going up, I think it was in early, very early 1970s. And I can remember the boast. It had 12 C-band transponders on it. What that means in English was it could transmit 12 color TV channels. Now, two of those went to CBC, a couple to Bell, but 12 channels. It must be pretty exciting when you think of where we were and where we are now and where we're headed.
Yeah, it really is a different era. And those satellites you're talking about were tens of thousands of kilometers from Earth broadcasting down. Where we are today, though, is we have all of these satellites putting into a low Earth orbit, 1,000 kilometers from Earth, not tens of thousands, talking up and down and across to each other. They're building constellations. They're providing global broadband, near real-time Earth imaging, all the kinds of things that are really important for us in tracking climate change, monitoring methane leaks, or rural areas having broadband, high-speed internet, even in the middle of a hurricane or a winter storm, if you've got a satellite in space that's broadcasting it. So the world has certainly changed in the amount of throughput of data that is coming through these satellites, and that's being provided to everything from cell phones and everything else in between.
You're listening to Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, joined this hour by Stephen Mateer. He is President and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. Was space always something for you when you were a kid, Stephen? Was it always part of where you hoped you would end up?
My earliest memory in the late 60s, where I lived in White Sands, New Mexico, traveling over to Las Cruces, is seeing a plant alit out in the desert. And it turns out years and years later that I found out that that was where they did the original Apollo lunar lander ascent and descent testing. And I ended up landing a job there in 1989, worked there for 16 years and really thoroughly enjoyed being a part of the space shuttle program, working with astronauts and working on the space shuttle propulsion systems. It was extremely exciting for me. So, you know, from that earliest beginning through that era, and then now working in the commercial space sector and building Canada's first spaceport that encompasses the 30-something years that I've been doing this.
It has to be an amazing experience, and I'm guessing one that's transferred on now to interns at Maritime Launch. When you walk up to that door at NASA and your card actually opens that door and you get to walk through and inside and you're part of it, it's all being repeated again for an awful lot of employees at Maritime Launch. It's an incredibly exciting time.
Oh, very much so. Probably one of the most fun times for me was, you know, donning the bunny suits of a clean room and in the orbital processing facility for NASA, the Kennedy Space Center, and walking up and down the cargo bay of one of the space shuttles and seeing something like that and knowing where it was going and what it did was pretty phenomenal. I was honored to receive what's called the Silver Snoopy Award. It's an astronaut safety award back in 1996 for my efforts on the space shuttle program that I genuinely cherish. And what's cool about the Silver Snoopy is it's essentially just a tie tack that looks like Snoopy from Charlie Brown, but it's been to space. It was a part of STS-69. It traveled millions of miles circling the Earth for several weeks as a part of that space shuttle mission. And I was honored to be given that by an astronaut, Commander Dave Walker. So it's really thrilling for me. And I just love seeing how I can pass this along to the youth today. We've got a rocket launch happening here with a suborbital launch in July out at Spaceport Nova Scotia. And we're hosting Arbalest. They're a York University rocket launch team. They've got a two-stage rocket, and they want to reach new heights with. Those kids were out here a few weeks ago, just thrilled and excited to be a part of our first launch attempt and plan for Spaceport Nova Scotia and for them to be a part of that. So it's really about growing that sector. We can't get enough of that opportunity of exciting these kids. We're working with companies that are building CubeSats and kids that are building CubeSats and working with the Canadian Space Agency as well. It's a heady time for Canada. It is really a key opportunity, a key threshold.
Just a quick note, by the way, because I was curious when I read about the Silver Snoopy, so I did read up on it. Charles M. Schulz was really excited about the U.S. space program. When NASA approached him, he loved the idea and actually drew the image that your pin is based on, comes with the certificate saying that it has been on a mission. That must have been a surreal moment for you being presented with that, considering the other people at NASA who are also wearing that.
Yes, and the rarity of that award is something to mention as well. It is the astronaut's award for safety. It's not just a nominal, normal safety acknowledgement. I mean, these are very, very rare in being given out and being given out by astronauts. You know, there is something significant that was done a part of that. And I have to tell you, the reason I really bring that up is because that's what I'm bringing to Spaceport Nova Scotia. I'm bringing a culture of safety and human space flight, even though we're launching cargo, to how we'll operate facilities and build this and set a true respect for safety and the environment as the Spaceport Nova Scotia becomes operational.
Now, the Artemis II announcement was obviously very exciting for the entire country. I'm curious, what does it mean to you that Canada is now going to the moon?
This is a long time coming. I'm not sure Canadians fully appreciate where we started and where we are today with the space program, and they've come so far, and us having the honor to be a part of that for the first full orbital launch. But it is really an exciting time with the commercial space sector really supporting Artemis. And what people aren't getting is it's not really a government program, right? There is a significant component of the commercial sector that's participating in that, whether it's Boeing or Lockheed or Voyager Space or all the companies that we're working with that are building this stuff for SpaceX and that are building these rockets and capabilities to be able to build space stations in space and go to the moon and provide leap off points for deep space. It's just an amazing time for us as a country to realize our role, not just a government, but as a whole country, to be able to be a part of this really important access into space.
Tell you what, let's take a break, and when we come back after traffic, as we're finding out this hour, Canada doesn't at present have a footprint into space, but that's certainly changing. What is involved in bringing the Maritime Launch Spaceport to fruition, and what does the future hold? And after looking for a site across North America, how did Nova Scotia check off all the boxes? If you have questions, comments, feedback, they do want to hear from you. And you can find out how Maritime Launch is propelling Nova Scotian and Canadian dreams, communities, and talent. And for the latest developments, follow along on social media. You can check out the news section of their website or sign up and get connected via their mailing list. All you got to do, go to maritimelaunch.com, maritimelaunch.com, or you can follow along on Twitter. One word, Maritime Launch, Maritime Launch. Today, we're finding out about Canada's first and only orbital launch facility, Maritime Launch. I'm Ian Grant. Ask the Expert continues here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We are back. I'm Ian Grant, and this is Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm joined this hour by Steve Mateer. He is a former NASA contractor, and he is currently the president and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. Steve, one stock analyst called it the most unique company he has ever covered. I guess it's a bit of a double-edged sword since it's such a unique concept. I'm curious, do you find potential investors get it right away because of all the space publicity that's taking place now?
The investors definitely find this interesting and intriguing, and they love to go home and tell their spouses about it and their kids about it. Guess who I met with today? The guy is building Canada's rocket launch facility and doing all this great stuff. But then finding the comparables is certainly difficult for investors to be able to point to that says, yes, this is a safe place to invest. But it is the place that our industry needs to go today. We have commercial rockets. We have commercial satellites, Starlink, and orbital transfer vehicles, and OneWeb, and Telesat, and all these people that are building constellations, doing amazing things in space. So they're commercial rockets, they're commercial satellites, commercial data output, or they're all using government ranges. The direction this industry has to go is to crack that mold and basically have commercial launch completely. And that's where we're providing this such a unique thing, I think, to the industry that has a lot of our satellite clients extremely excited, is that we can offer them commercial launch capability when they want to go, where they want to go, at a respectable price. You're not stuck at a government range, launching it at the end of the line that has other priorities for NASA, Air Force, or whatever it is, whatever government missions there may be, or getting a rideshare to a place that you didn't really want to be, but you're in space and you have to take it. Now, we're offering a commercial opportunity for all these satellite clients to get access when and where they want to go. And that's one of the unique pieces of this thing. But you're right, getting back to that original piece, how do investors get their arms around this whole thing and being able to understand this? And it really boils down to letting them see how we've matured this and de-risked it now since 2016 when we started it, and understanding the path forward is much shorter than the path that we've come to get to this point to actually putting rockets into space. We've broken ground. We've done the initial roads. We've got the EA approved. We've got a 40-year lease of 335 acres. We've got letters of intent from more than a dozen different satellite clients, firmer term sheets for multi-launches with half a dozen others. We've got interest from launch vehicle companies around the world that also see the opportunity of what we offer at this location, that don't have their own ranges to launch from, that are knocking on our door, seeing if they can fit into what we're offering. It's that sort of de-risking that our investors are really grabbing a hold of over this last 12 months or so, since we went public in particular, that has really changed the dynamic for us, for sure.
Stephen, everyone's buzzing about AI these days, and I read somewhere that it's now at a point, or has arrived at a point over the past 2 years, that it wasn't predicted to be at until around 2050. Now, we were talking during the first segment, numbers are suggesting the space industry will be a $1 trillion industry by 2040. Is it fair to suggest that all of a sudden it seems like the space industry is moving exponentially forward, where for the past couple of decades there wasn't that buzz about it, and now it too is just, it's all over the place?
It is certainly ramped up. So Euroconsult is predicting 2031 for that $1 billion per year. And their latest numbers were the 464, which represented almost a 15% growth from the year before. So, yes, we're certainly on an upswing for sure in the development and launch of satellites and the data side that comes out of it. Think of the remote control of vehicles, the Internet of Things, all the applications that are coming to play right now are significantly – it's just – where the art of the possible is just being realized. You're absolutely right.
I'm speaking with Stephen Mateer. He is the president and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. Stephen, Canada doesn't have a direct footprint at the moment into space. I'm curious, what is involved in setting up a service like Maritime Launch? Obviously, more than just finding a spot of land, but how do you guys go about bringing all of this to fruition?
Well, I typically characterize it in some major buckets, right? There's the satellite clients and their interest in it. There's the spaceport location and the build of the spaceport itself. There's the regulatory component, that whether it's provincially or federally or globally, that has to be considered when you're launching satellites as well. There's the launch vehicle component of it as well. And then there's the financing pieces, the all the money that's required to do all of this thing. So those are the kind of the big five buckets. And that just helps me get my arms around it on a day-to-day basis. But inside each of those are, you know, a myriad of pieces that have to be considered. You know, looking at the regulatory piece, it was super important that Minister Algabra came out on January 20th at the Canadian Space Agency headquarters and announced, we're embracing rocket launch from Canada. We're doing it. We're joining the commercial space industry and we're moving forward. But that was a very simple announcement. What also came with that is we're also going to launch on a case-by-case basis within the existing regulations and framework. To me, that was the most important part of it, because it allows me as a commercial company to move forward working with the federal government on all the pieces to be able to do a rocket launch while we're informing the more permanent regulations that are years down the road. So, you know, that was amazing. But now look inside that, you know, there's space policy, there's operations, there's airspace, there's treaties associated with putting stuff into space. There are CRTC regulations in broadcasting. You look at the myriad of the regulations associated with anything and everything we're doing, and they're quite complex, right? So that's where I've got this super talented team that are all working together, and I've got this really phenomenal support from all these government officials and the levels of bureaucracy that are not being bureaucratic. They're really working hard. We have working groups that are pulled together to address how we're going to phase in rocket launch in Canada. It's really quite exciting. But you're right. There are just so many complexities to doing this thing that regulatory piece is just one of them.
Steve, Maritime Launch, as you said, works closely with the Canadian government, worked with the Canadian Space Agency, Global Affairs, others developing a regulatory framework. Is there room for Canadian government investment in the project?
Well, there's certainly room for it, and I think there's interest in launching capability for Canada, whether it's a CSA or DND as a part of their mission and profile in North America, working alongside their U.S. partners. I think there's key potential for clients, absolutely. I think there is certainly opportunity for them to help us continue to de-risk it with some federal programs. We haven't received anything to date, but would certainly be open to that idea.
No, I understand you guys were originally looking at sites in Mexico, throughout the United States, and all over Canada, but you chose Nova Scotia. Now, I understand there was a variety of reasons for that, but safety was apparently one of the leading ones.
Oh, absolutely. That's number one, and that harkens back to the earlier discussion about my days as a NASA contractor and quantity, distance, separation of propellants and rocket launch, and safety to the people on the ground, safety to the people in the waterway. The number one thing you look for is, can you launch to where a satellite client wants to put their stuff into orbit? Spaceport Nova Scotia nails it. You can look due south to the coast of Africa and South America and that huge expanse of ocean, and that's in the direction where everybody wants to put their satellites into orbit, into those polar kinds of inclinations, north to south. And then you look at the safety aspects of it. You look at the ground safety around it. What is a good day? What is a bad day? What is the worst day? And are people safe? Then you look downrange over the waterways where you're dropping stages, or if you had a problem with the vehicle, it's going to land in the ocean in a safe zone away from anyone. And it, those two pieces, the ground safety and the airspace safety and the downrange safety, those pieces right there are the key factors that really validate this. And that was the very first thing we did before we announced any launch site, when we were looking at more than a dozen different locations in North America. When we were doing that down select, that was the very first thing you look at. Is this where people want to go? Satellite clients. And if so, is it safe? And that is fundamentally the first piece we did. We took those results back to our partners at Transport Canada, and we worked with them to walk through our analysis, and they accepted that analysis. That allowed us to really move forward.
Let's take a break, and when we come back after traffic, as we are finding out, Canada has a front row seat in the new frontier of commercial space opportunities and certainly plans to be a leader in this booming industry. Just ahead, preparing to launch, and we find out Canso Nova Scotia is no stranger when it comes to leading the way in communications and how in that province satellite innovators are going to grow, launch, and build connections close to home and around the world. If you have questions, comments, feedback, they do want to hear from you. And you can find out how maritime launch is propelling Nova Scotia and Canadian dreams, communities, and talent. And for the latest developments, follow along on social media. You can check out the news section of their website or sign up and get connected via their mailing list. All you got to do, go to maritimelaunch.com, maritimelaunch.com, or you can follow along on Twitter. One word, Maritime Launch, Maritime Launch. Today, we're finding out about Canada's first and only orbital launch facility, Maritime Launch. I'm Ian Grant. Ask the Expert continues here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. And we are back. This is Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. Good afternoon. I'm Ian Grant, joined by Stephen Mateer. He is a former NASA contractor, current president and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. And what a fascinating conversation this hour. Now, Stephen, for anyone who's joined us in the last few minutes or so, can you just go over for us what Maritime Launch is?
Well, Maritime Launch is Canada's first and only commercial orbital launch facility that is intending and will deliver satellites to orbit for this burgeoning industry that has so much demand to put satellites into orbit for, you know, global broadband, near Earth imaging, and those kinds of activities. We're in a location in North America that is really a great spot for the industry, the satellite clients that have come to us to basically place their satellites into orbit. And fundamentally, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, is servicing a customer that has a need to deliver their products into orbit. Whether you want to think of us as a FedEx delivery person that pulled it from the warehouse and put it on your doorstep, that's exactly what we're trying to do with dozens and hundreds and thousands of satellites over the years ahead.
This isn't just about a spaceport. Maritime Launch is attracting talent. It's attracting leadership, local and provincial economic growth. You're going to create hundreds of jobs in the province. And also, from what you've said, this isn't just a good idea. You started construction last year, so I have to imagine you guys are heading for launch day.
Yeah, we are. And it's a crawl, walk, run. We're working with our federal partners over at Transport Canada, as they've committed to this launch regulation framework using the existing framework that we have today while we inform the permanent framework for the future. And that crawl, walk, run really begins with hosting York University and the Arbalest rocket team coming out to Spaceport Nova Scotia in July and doing a fairly simple launch of their vehicle that will hopefully achieve 30, 35 kilometers in altitude, go 15 or so kilometers downrange, and then we'll go retrieve it out of the ocean. But what that allows us to do is mature our processes with NAV Canada, with Transport Canada, with the RCMP, with the Oceans Waterways, all those kinds of pieces. It's virtually the same amount of work for this small suborbital launch as we would need for a larger, medium, or any launcher going to orbit. It's actually harder in some respects because this vehicle comes back down, so we've got to track it further out for a re-entry. So that's what's happening in July. We'll follow that with another one later this year, another suborbital launch, hopefully at higher altitude. Exercising the system ourselves instead of just hosting one, we'll lead one. And then early next year, we'll start folding in our plan to deliver our first small launcher, but orbital launcher. We're working with a number of clients, prospectively, you know, Reaction Dynamics, as their development continues here, to be able to put a satellite into orbit, a small satellite into orbit from Nova Scotia, as call that the walk portion. The suborbital is the crawl part. The small orbital launcher is the walk part. And then the medium class launcher, where we're putting 5 tons of cargo into orbit with, you know, 20 or 30 satellites at a time. You know, that's the run. That's the place we want to be, where we're launching a dozen times a year by beginning at the end of 2025. And we're, you know, servicing the constellation industry with all their satellites that they need to get up for global broadband or whatever their solution is that they're providing.
I've seen artist renditions of the maritime launch facilities, as we said, that are currently under construction for Launch Pad Control Center. In Canso, it was once a really prosperous fishing community, now looking for alternate options. And boy, did you guys arrive there at the right time. Now, it is an incredibly beautiful part of Nova Scotia, but not exactly teeming with candidates qualified to work in a space launch facility. How is Maritime Launch going to address this?
Well, first I have to tell you that there's a history before that as well. Transatlantic Cable landed in Canso, Hazel Hill, back in the late 1800s.
Wow.
And served as the new communication hub for the globe back then, right? For 40 plus years before that changed. So they have a heritage going back to the earliest days of communication from North America to Europe that they were a part of. But your point is well taken that it is a rural community and very much vibrant, a lobster fishing community, very beautiful place. And that was part of the evaluation we did when we were looking for different launch sites. So there is a deep sea port. St. Francis Xavier University is about an hour away. There, you know, Halifax, of course, with the shipbuilding, has tons and tons of resources and capabilities here to draw from. There's just going to be a new anchor tenant in a different part of Nova Scotia that's coming along, that's going to grow this community as we move forward. Yes, there right now today, there are not a lot of hotel services in the area, but I can certainly tell you there's a lot of interest from hoteliers that are looking at this opportunity and embracing it as well. There is plenty of talent within Canada. There isn't a day goes by that I'm not getting an interest from a resume from somebody interested in, mm-hmm. in moving out here and being a part of this. There is the excitement of Canada being a first launch and becoming part of this launching state has a lot of talent that is really keen to get out here and be a part of it.
It really does feel exciting. You know, it feels like that little kid staring up at the stars. We're talking about when things are up and running, and you mentioned the York University doing a bit of a test launch. Can you just walk me through, because I have no clue what's involved leading up to a launch. I mean, is it something that you can do every week? Is it something that takes 3-4 months? Do the companies just show up with a big wooden crate? I have no clue how it all comes together.
Well, that's really, you know, interesting when you think about the space shuttle program. Of course, it was the space shuttle would land and it would go through a full refurbishment for quite a few months, replacing tiles and upgrading computers and checking safety systems and rolling it back out to the pad and refueling it and getting it ready for a launch again. Those were pretty expensive and they took a long time. And it's true, if you have a medium-class launcher that can carry 5 tons to orbit, those do require, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of prep time. So the rockets come to us in stages. The stages are organized together in what we call the horizontal integration facility. The payload customer shows up in that same 6-week time frame, and we're testing and checking out their satellites, accepting them into our facility and placing them in the cone of the rocket, taking it down to the launch pad and launching it. So the typical launch campaign for us is on the order of 6 weeks. And we can do probably up to 12 per year, given the current plan and modeling we have. But that said, there's also these newcomers that are really working with mobilized equipment that is containerized, that they can essentially, you know, show up with 2 or 3 flatbeds with some containers, drop them onto a launch site for a small launcher, and put stuff into orbit, say 1,000 kilograms of launch capacity or several hundred kilograms. Those kinds of vehicles, they don't need extensive major flame trenches and large propellant farms and integration facilities and things and just even the number of satellites that have to be integrated. So it's a much, much simpler routine for a small launcher to come here, which is why we're using them as our walk in that crawl, walk, run I was just describing previously. because they require a lot less facility infrastructure. They can move a lot quicker to get things done. And it's really about control of public access for launch to get that safely put into orbit.
Let's take a break. And when we come back after traffic, as we are finding out, Canada has a front row seat in the new frontier of commercial space opportunities and certainly plans to be a leader in this booming industry. If you have questions, comments, feedback, they do want to hear from you. And you can find out how Maritime Launch is propelling Nova Scotian and Canadian dreams, communities, and talent. And for the latest developments, follow along on social media. You can check out the news section of their website or sign up and get connected via their mailing list. All you got to do, go to maritimelaunch.com, maritimelaunch.com, or you can follow along on Twitter. One word, Maritime Launch, Maritime Launch. Today, we're finding out about Canada's first and only orbital launch facility, Maritime Launch. I'm Ian Grant. Ask the Expert continues here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We're back. This is Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant. I'm joined this hour by Stephen Mateer. He is a former NASA contractor, currently president and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. Stephen, you bring something very, very, very unique to this conversation in that you kind of did this already. You've built from the ground up before. You worked on the first purpose-built commercial spaceport in the world. That was the Spaceport America launch site in New Mexico. And I guess you're one of the very few people I can say, what is the feeling going to be like as you watch that first rocket head into space from a facility that you worked with a team to design?
Thank you for that question. I really did enjoy my time, cutting my teeth there after my days at NASA helping to build Spaceport America, working with the state of New Mexico and working to get the A&E firms designed and construction underway through operational startup and everything else. That was certainly a great experience to have a greenfield project, as they say, even though it was in the middle of the desert, that turned from a field into a spaceport and provided me a great deal of lessons learned. And that experience has really informed me for moving forward and how to build community support, how to tap into the resources that are available, even how to tender the packages for construction that makes sense to streamline construction and get things done. But at the end of the day, getting to that first launch is just, it's going to be something that's hard to even describe. I'll tell you, when I was working in NASA, I was testing rocket engines for the space shuttle program. The first test I did was for an orbital maneuvering engine for the space shuttle called the OMES engine. It's used for orbit insertion and deorbit burns to bring the space shuttle home. And I was the TC. I was sitting there on console. I was directing all these people to run their processes to do this test successfully. And that was a blast. The testing rocket engines was a blast. I can't imagine how this one's going to be watching this rocket lift off and head into space.
We talked a lot about your background, but the managers, engineers, technicians, designers, the mission specialists that you have at Maritime Launch, they've launched satellites worldwide, and you really have put together some exceptionally solid teams.
Yeah, we really have. We're really pleased with how this has developed. Being able to, access the talent across Canada that's available to support us and across the globe, whether it's U.S. or Europe, it has really been phenomenal to see that outpouring and capability that's resident and ready to go.
The stock ticker for Maritime Launch is MAXQ. That wasn't chosen by accident.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. MAXQ is a launch term, and what it references is technically the maximum dynamic pressure the vehicle sees during launch. In other words, crossover between air pressure and velocity puts a lot of stress on the launch vehicle. Once you reach MAXQ, that's the point of that maximum stress, and then you're past that maximum stress point as you're going into orbit. You haven't reached orbit, but you're past that point where the vehicle's not likely to come apart anymore. Mm. And I really felt like when we went public a year ago, April 27th, that we were really passing through that point, that this isn't an if, It's a win. And we're not to space yet, but we're at a point that we know we're going to get there. A lot of work to do to get there, certainly going forward. But, you know, felt like that was a really important milestone for us and representative by that ticker MAXQ. And in the U.S., it's a MAXQF on the OTC of U.S. exchange.
We've discussed your focus on phase one. I'm curious, what is the longer term outlook, though, for maritime launch? I mean, it's the crystal ball question, I guess, of what lies ahead.
I will tell you that as we have achieved the successes that we have, we've de-risked the project and construction has started, and the obvious place this sector needs to go with a commercial launch service provider going away from government ranges, we have been approached by a number of other entities globally that want us to replicate what we're doing here. So this could be the first in the wave for the future. I really do think it's a game changer for our industry that we will be providing this commercial launch from a commercial launch facility, and that replicating it will be the obvious steps, much like you have airports operating today, that obvious steps forward.
What are some of the career opportunities there? And any advice to a listener who's listening to this show right now thinking, man, a career in Canada's space sector would be awesome. What are the first steps? What are the qualifications, I guess? You know, what are you looking for? And how does someone end up being a part of your project?
Well, certainly we invite them to, submit their resumes through our website. And we have construction contractors and construction management companies that we can certainly funnel them to for the duration of construction as well. But, part of it comes back to my experience from my days at NASA and what it takes to run a facility like this. Most people really don't get that, 80%+ of the workforce at a facility like this, whether it's in Florida or anything like that, is there are a lot of trades. There's instrumentation and controls and mechanics and pipe fitters and plumbers and people that are helping to care for the facility, IT experts, computer programming for launch control. The number of people that are really involved in the orbital mechanics and rocket launch, those aspects of it, are really quite small. So it really is. I'll give you an example. I went through the Nova Scotia Community College list of courses not too long ago in trying to define what my workforce would look like. What do I need for an entry position? And most of the coursework was clearly, well-defined in community college. Yes, I need geeky people with slide rules and orbital mechanics, a few of those as well. But those are not the ones that are really going to be the backbone that are running this facility. It is really those kinds of talents that already exist in Canada that didn't realize what they're doing over on a liquid natural gas pipeline applies to a rocket launch facility propellant piping system, for example. So I think that it's really a matter of getting people to look at what their talents are and understanding how they might apply into this sector, and then getting their resume in front of us and helping us understand how they can fit in.
Stephen, as I wrap up, for potential investors who are listening, there is an awful lot happening out there in the world right now. Why would you suggest people invest in maritime launch?
The industry is in a serious bottleneck, right, with respect to the number of satellites that are being built and the number that need to get into orbit. And when you look at where Spaceport Nova Scotia is, on the northeastern tip of North America, and you look south of there, and it's ocean all the way to South America and ocean all the way to Africa, and you compare that with where all these satellite clients want to put their stuff, and it's in that swath. It's in that triangle, if you will, of ocean area there from our location. That is where they want to go. They call it polar orbit. It's due south, plus a little bit. That's called sun synchronous orbit, to inclinations up to 45 degrees. In other words, off the coast of Africa and then some. And it's in that launch direction that everybody wants to put these tens, hundreds, thousands of satellites into orbit. It's a natural It's the best location in North America that served all those ranges of inclinations. You can get part of it from Florida, but you can't do sun synchronous. You can do part of it from California at Vandenberg Air Force Base, but those are government ranges as well with their own government priorities. Commercial launch site servicing satellite industry that is keen to see us come online. Launch vehicles lined up at the door that want to use our facility. Full government support from the federal government in the regulatory framework they're moving forward with, whether it's Global Affairs or ICID or CSA, DND, Transport Canada, all those bodies that are really pulled together to make this thing happen. It's been clearly de-risked significantly, and we're really optimistic about the future.
Steve Mater, thank you so much for this hour. Phenomenal.
Very much my pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Stephen Mater, he is a former NASA contractor, and currently he is the president and CEO of Maritime Launch Services. Now, if you have any questions, comments, feedback, they do want to hear from you. To find out how Maritime Launch is propelling Nova Scotian and Canadian dreams, communities, and talent, and for the latest developments, follow along on social media. Now, you can check out the news section on their website or sign up and get connected via their mailing list. Just go to maritimelaunch.com. That's maritimelaunch.com. Or on Twitter, one word, Maritime Launch. Today, we were finding out about Canada's first and only orbital launch facility, Maritime Launch. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ian Grant, and this has been Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto.